And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
That's right, Fred.
And we invite you to visit us at FredandJeff.com, where you can check out old shows, see pictures of our guests, and the shenanigans of Jeffrey.
Shenanigans?
Lots of shenanigans. Sleeping in the studio.
I've never slept in the studio. I've lounged in the studio.
It's close enough to sleeping. Let's see, what else do we do? Oh, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the good old program on iTunes.
That is correct.
I'm just going to, like, stop so that I don't know what you're doing over there.
Fred, unlike most of our listeners, I am not tuning you out. I'm listening to you. I'm intent on what you're saying, but at the same time, earlier in the week, you sent me an email, or no, maybe Glenn sent me an email about, you know, some stuff that we want to talk about today, and darn it, I can't find it here on my goofy tablet.
Well,
so yeah,
luckily I have hard copies, but just one for me.
Mm-hmm. That's how you roll, isn't it?
That's exactly how I roll.
That's how you work it.
So this is the point in the program where, beyond harassing each other, we talk about stuff coming up in the community. Now, there are 12. No. You know, we went to Catholic school together, and the nuns beat grammar into us. So you should respect their authority and make sure you use the right...
I did. You said there are, and I agreed with you by saying there is.
Oh, well, no.
So the nuns didn't beat you enough.
No, they didn't, but I still have scars, and we can talk about that later. But there are 12 University of Arizona hockey games coming up.
There is.
You know, we missed the last one. Well, I shouldn't say we missed it. The last one was last night for the last homestand. But beginning in December, there's 12 weekends, like almost in a row, of ice hockey in the desert.
Beautiful.
Over the TCC. So we're going to invite people to go see the University of Arizona ice hockey team.
Right.
Play. Butterfly Magic at Tucson Botanical Gardens is going on through April 30th.
Love it.
This is going on now. The 2012 Loft Film Festival is going on through November 15th. And not only will you be seeing some great films in this festival, but you're also helping to raise funds for the new facility that they're building over on Speedway.
Very cool.
And actually, Peggy Johnson's coming on in a couple of weeks to talk about all that stuff.
Very fun. You know, I didn't know that we had so many film festivals here in Tucson. We've got the Tucson International Film Festival.
Yeah, the Underground Film Festival.
The Underground, and now we have the Loft. Very cool.
Yeah, I think there's actually a couple others as well. But there it is. Tucson is just a happy little film place.
If we could just get those tax breaks to bring the production companies back.
We'll talk about that next legislative session.
All right.
Next year. The Gaslight. Okay, tonight at the Gaslight Theater is the last airing of The Phantom of the Opera.
The last airing? Showing a movie?
No, I'm just using that term out of context.
Once again, the nuns didn't beat you enough.
They did not. So the last program, the last showing of The Phantom of the Opera, they're taking off a week, and then they're getting up for Scrooge, which begins next weekend, and it goes through January 6th. So the holiday classic, Scrooge, as only the Gaslight Theater can present it.
Is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now,
the only place you can get away with throwing popcorn at the bad guy. And not getting kicked out.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I think it is. Because I did and didn't get kicked out.
Okay. Well, you're a big guy. They probably wouldn't mess with you.
And the fact that I pointed at the guy next to me and said he did it.
No, oh, then that guy got carried out.
Just kidding.
So the El Tour de Tucson's coming up. We talked about that last week. November 17th.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And at Tucson Museum of Art, the Matisse exhibit is still going on through January 20th. So all sorts of fun stuff going on in Neo Pueblo.
And isn't there a production of Beauty and the Beast happening soon?
Yeah, that's, let's see, where's my calendar.
Is that at University?
Rincon University High School.
I forget
how the order is.
Uh-huh.
The order of their.
UHS Rincon.
But, Beauty and the Beast is going on the 14th and 15th of, it's like a Friday, Saturday.
I think it's the 16th, 17th.
Oh, then it is the 16th. You're right, it is the 16th, 17th.
What do you know? Aren't you related to, going to be performing in that. And actually, two...
It is the 16th and 17th.
Yeah, two very important roles that Friday night.
Yes, my Friday night the 16th, my older son is playing the Beast.
Nice.
And my younger son is playing Maurice, who is Belle's father.
Very fun.
And they're both singing and dancing and having a good time.
And making you look like you knew what you were doing when they were growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, if that were only true. So check out Beating the Beast at Rincon UHS.
And again, folks, the takeaway for our first segment is there is so much stuff going on here in our community. Get out, meet your neighbors, have fun. Because now is the time that everybody else in the world wish they live in Tucson. Because if it's not raining here, it's not snowing
here.
It's
a little chilly at the end of this week.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's the Chamber of Commerce.
Poster child.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the weather. So get out and meet your family, or get out and meet your neighbors, and have a good time. And stick around here on the Fred Jeff Show. We'll be right back with our guest today, who's got... You know, another guy that went out and met his neighbors and has a great story to share. So stick around.
Barely even friends, then somebody bends unexpectedly. Just a little change. Small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Why are we proud to live in Tucson?
Because our four-star spas, guest ranches, and resorts attract admiring visitors from around the world.
And our original restaurants draw rave reviews across the country.
Because the Science and Technology Park is creating a cutting-edge biotech corridor.
And the University of Arizona leads the nation in optics and astronomy.
And because the nation's best gem and mineral showcase brings us thousands of visitors every year.
This is my Tucson, and together we thrive.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that will exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Hi, this is Jeff Ronstadt from Ronstadt Insurance and the Fred and Jeff Show. We are right in the middle of Medicare open enrollment. So if you need help or your mom and dad need help with their Medicare insurance, whether it's a supplement or a Medicare Advantage plan, give us a call at Ronstadt Insurance, 721-4848. We'll be happy to help them. We'll sit down and show them plans from Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Net, United Healthcare. We pretty much have them all. Give us a call at Ronstadt Insurance, 721-4848. We are pioneers in good service.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for house of light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A house of light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're talking about all the people, the places, events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so blazingly wonderful.
That is exactly right, Hank.
And we invite you to visit us at FredandJeff.com, where you can listen to old shows, check out some old photos, and have a good time there. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the good old program on iTunes.
Right. And if you've got any suggestions for future shows, send them our way, because we're always interested in meeting great neighbors here in Tucson.
That's right. And actually, some of the better shows we've gotten on referral.
Yeah, but Fred, you're not supposed to tell people that, because then it makes us sound like a couple of toolboxes that don't know anybody cool.
Well, we know a lot of people cool, like our guest today.
Yes.
Father Glenn Snow.
Yeah, but that other show that we did, the best show we've ever had, we didn't know those people.
Which show was that?
I'm just teasing you. No.
I can't remember a good show at any point in the history of this program. But
what are you talking about? They've all been good shows.
Well, the ones I've been on, yeah.
That's true, yes. You've been
you've
on
missed,
quite...
You've missed a couple.
Yes, and those were not good shows.
All right.
Sorry, George. So with us here in studio is one of our favorite people, Father Glenn Snow of the St. Cyril's Parish here in Tucson.
Yep.
How you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Glenn, there's so many things we want to ask you.
Okay, just right off the top.
None of them pertaining to God.
Right off the top. You know, when we were little kids, if we didn't say Father, somebody, we get beaten by the nuns.
No, we wouldn't.
Or by our grandmother.
You know, you're taking this I got beat by the nun story way too far.
I'm looking.
It's a fun story to tell, but it's, you know, it's 99% baloney. Yeah, that's not where you got that scar, Fred.
Yes, it is.
No, that's when you fell off your bike.
No, wrong. Okay, so, but you know, as you get older, you know, we're little kids, you have to show the respect. But I guess, you know, it's nice that we can have a conversation and not have to predicate it by, you know, saying Father.
Wait, if we're in church, Father's probably appropriate, but my name is Glenn, so either one of those is fine.
All right, so Father, where are you from?
Yeah, this is the church of Fred Jeff.
Yeah, well.
you're a transplant, aren't you, Glenn?
I am. I grew up in Southern California in the suburbs of Los Angeles. And my family all moved here. When I joined the Carmelites back in 1982, my family the next 6 months moved down here to Tucson. My dad was working for Hughes Aircraft and transferred from Culver City in L.A. down to the plant here in Tucson. And so my family has all been here. Most of my family has been here ever since. Ever since I joined the Carmelites, they tried to change addresses, but I found out where they lived.
They were upset you weren't a Jesuit, right?
No. We're much more casual than the Jesuits. Yeah. We're a loose group.
There you go. So. Yes.
Well, yeah, we have a cousin who's a Jesuit. He's kind of stiff.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
Oh, man. Marky, I'm sorry. I will pray for Fred tonight. So the show today isn't about the Catholic Church. It's not about that kind of good stuff. That's for other people to talk about.
Yeah, especially since you didn't promote the St. Cyril Fun Days. We should, you know, did he go to confession and confess that sin?
I could not answer that question.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you. Just like my attorney or doctor or the lady that cuts my hair, they do not tell stories out of school, Fred.
All right.
Or my banker. So you have a bachelor's in science and history?
A bachelor's in history. From California State University, yeah.
Okay.
And
what possessed you to get a bachelor's in history?
Well, all the grammar school kids have to put on their earmuffs now, but I hated history when I was in grammar school because I thought it was the overview kind of history, and I thought it was all the same stuff. Oh, we're going to do this again. We're going to do that again. And I was bored to tears.
Dates and places.
Yeah. And I just didn't really thrill me at all. And then in high school, I had one of the best teachers to this day that I've ever had, a Carmelite named Father Leopold Gluckert was his name. And he taught a history class that was all, he called it the National Enquirer approach to history. It was all the scandals and interesting folks. And so we learned about the French Revolution, but we learned about it through individual profiles of people who were in different social levels in that whole historical scene. And he, when he was doing military history, You know, this is high school boys he was teaching. He brought in, oh, here's a musket and here's a bayonet. And,
wow.
And he brought in, you know, chain shot and grape shot and all these things that were, that we could get our hands on and we could kind of, you know, we could be boys and
well, yeah,
pay
before you just read about it,
yeah.
Now you're actually getting to handle it.
And from that moment on, I said, oh, this stuff can be cool. So I ended up just loving history from high school on, went into, got a degree in it in college, and then went off to the novitiate, which is kind of the religious life equivalent of boot camp for a year, at the end of college.
Right.
So, there's no calisthenics involved, but early mornings are a part of the routine. So, yeah.
Multiple rosaries.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you have this huge love of history.
Yeah.
But you, so from California, you moved to...
Well, from California, I moved to Middletown, New York. I had joined the Carmelites.
And that's where you
went. And that's where I went for that novitiate. Was there for a year, and then I moved out to Joliet, Illinois, and taught for 2 years in a high school in Joliet, Illinois.
And then, did you teach history?
I was the utility infielder. I taught what they needed to have taught, but for the most part, it was either history or theology, history or religion. And but I was also the because I did a lot of photography. I got volunteered to do the yearbook, and I had worked in a publishing company when I was in college, so I got volunteered to be the yearbook guy.
Right.
So I ended up doing that, and coached soccer, which was brutal. When I hung up my whistle, sports fans around the world threw a keg party. I was horrible. I mean, it was fun and everything, but I was not a good coach.
Oh,
so
no.
I'm very good at cheering people on, but let's not go any further than
right.
that. Yeah,
it does not signify
competence.
Do you have a record you can talk about? Like
12 arrests, no convictions?
No, I couldn't even tell you what it was, although the first part was very close to asymptotically approaching zero.
Oof.
I was brutal.
Oof.
That's
yeah.
open for at least a 500.
No.
So you're teaching high school history, you're teaching high school theology, and then you get the call to move.
Well, and then I moved back to Washington, D.C. to do the academic training part of the seminary stuff. So that was a 4-year program back in Washington, D.C., that involved a master's degree, but it's a lot longer than that. It was 100 and something units is what it was of credit hours. And my specialty in that, my focus on that was church history. So I was able to get another chunk of my history, my love of history, kind of another fix for it there.
Good for you.
And then
when did you get the call to move to Tucson?
Well, after my ordination in 89, I moved to Mundelein, Illinois, where I taught high school, again, multiple subjects, and then moved to the south side of Chicago to teach at Mount Carmel High School. And I was there for 8 years. And then at the end of that, I moved out to Tucson. It was kind of a combination of things. One, my mom had passed away while I was living in Chicago, and I thought, you know what, I want to move back to Tucson because a lot of my family's here, and so I wanted to get back near my family if I could. And Father Fred Tillotson was the president at South Point at the time, and he asked me, because I'm a techno geek, he asked me if I knew anybody who had certifications who could be their technology director. And I said, well, I have certifications, Fred. So
I'd like to move back.
So I did. I moved back to Tucson, and I worked at South Point for 4 years, from 2002 to 2006, and then did a little short sabbatical, and that we oftentimes do in a transition from one ministry to another. And I moved from South Point to St. Cyril's, and have been full time at St. Cyril's for 6 years coming up in a couple weeks.
And now, but you're not a teacher at St. Cyril's?
No, I'm the associate pastor, or what they call parochial vicar, at St. Cyril's.
So somewhere, somehow, you had to find that fix for history.
Yeah, basically what happened was, the other thing is, at a parish, you don't have regular hours. There's no such thing as regular hours.
So your parish priest, you don't, I mean, you work hard on Sundays.
You're on call all the time. And we've got, I think our secretary told me we have 17 nursing homes and three hospices and Tucson Medical Center all in our parish boundaries. So we're always getting called out to various parishes.
For various ministry kind of things.
Yeah. And so I needed to do something with a day off. And I said, well, I'm going to get out of town and wander around a little bit. And that'll give me some time away. And I wanted to start writing some history again. So that's how I got involved in a couple of ghost towns down in Cochise County.
Huh, which brings us to why we have you here today. So you have become probably one of the few authorities on Southern Arizona ghost towns.
At least a few of them. There's a couple people who we tend to kind of specialize in this, that, or the other ghost town rather than all of them, because there are a lot. This was mining country, and there's a lot of boom towns that when flourished, and then they were gone in a couple of years.
So for the sake of Fred and I and our listeners, can you define ghost town for us? It's not a town where there's a ghost, because in Tucson could be a ghost town, but it's a town that what?
Well, it's a town, and most of them are boom towns that had a sizable population and a lot of activity, and then for one reason or another, that population just disappeared. Usually it's economic, but the population just disappeared, and that leaves a few stragglers, a few hangers-on who will hang out in that area because that's their home, or they've got other reasons to live there. But for the most part, you won't find much of any population in any of the ghost towns. So there's no real definition of it, as far as I know, except there used to be people here, and now there's not.
All right. We have to take a quick break. Maybe you have a little bit more time.
Well, you know, how many ghost towns are there? Because one of the things that I remember growing up, we used to go on silver mine tours and that kind of thing, and they're always, you know, there's always an associated town next to them, and there are shafts everywhere. You know, at one point there was the state came in and was like bulldozing the shafts closed or blowing them up or putting fences or something. So there, when you say there's a lot of activity, give us sort of a number of these kind of things.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if anybody can come up with an actual number of how many ghost towns would be in Arizona, just because it really depends on your definition of what makes a town. One of my towns,
bunch of tents versus structural buildings.
Yeah, one of my towns was Cortland, and it was for the first 3 years it was pretty much all tents, but it became the structures came later, and so you'd look at it and say that's a ghost town now. But whether it counted as a town at one point or another in its history is kind of an open definition.
Yeah, wow. And the other thing is, it seems like the main first building was the jail.
Yeah, and that's one of the last standing buildings too.
All right, we got to go.
See you now. We got to take a break, so we'll be right back. Stick around for the news and then more Fred and Jeff. As Congress Street opens and construction slows down, it's never been easier to enjoy downtown.
With more than 15,000 spaces, it's a breeze to find parking while you're downtown.
You can enjoy everything from world-class cuisine to great casual dining. Take in a show or explore dozens of galleries and museums.
Have a night on the town with the best nightlife around. Shop at amazing stores with unique and fashionable goods in Tucson's downtown.
Fun you won't find anywhere except downtown. Support your locally owned business downtown.
See more at Tucson. See more at
going down on Tucson.org.
See more at downtowntucson.org.
What a cheese. Well, you know, come on.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona.
Dave Fitzsimmons, cartoonist here. I figured since you can buy politicians so easily these days, why not rent an entire party? So I contacted Arizona Party Rental, and they said, that's not what we do. Well, guess what I found out? I found out they rent everything you need to throw a party. You know, I'm the kind of guy who likes getting married so often, it's good to know. Planning a party or a special event? Check him out at ArizonaPartyRental.net. Now, every time I get married, I call on Arizona Party Rental. If you're like me and you say I do more often than Larry King, call on Arizona Party Rental. And unlike Uncle Sam, they understand what a tight budget means.
Thanks a lot, David. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Do what Fitzsimmons does. Draw your own conclusions. Visit Arizona Party Rental today on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we ran out.
into the news.
So our guest today is Father Glenn Snow from St. Cyril Parish. And we brought him in to talk to him about his history, the passion for history, and the couple of ghost towns that he really knows. And the one thing it seemed to me, that one of the big structures that goes up kind of first and early is the jail. But I guess that's not true.
Now, Fred, you mean permanent structures, though, right?
Permanent structures, yeah, because, you know, usually tents, you know, the wagons, people camping out under trees, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, the tents are almost, in a mining town, the tents are always among the first, because that's where the miners would live, and tents and very, very fragile structures. Usually the jails came along. The jails were very, they were varied in their construction until the town gets more settled, and then you'd get a permanent structure. For instance, in the town of Gleason, one of my two ghost towns that I help out at, the first jail was a giant oak tree in the wash, and there was a cable that was wrapped around the oak tree, and you got shackled to the cable. And that didn't matter if that was overnight or if it was for a 30-day stay.
Really?
You got shackled to the cable, and it ran right next to the wash, so the only time the jail got cleaned out was when the wash ran. And
oh, wow.
And what happened was the town folks, as the town got bigger, the town folks got a little bit embarrassed that, well, our jail is the big tree over there. And by the way, in Gleason now, that tree is still there. It's a giant oak tree, and the cable is still, although it's wrapped around it, the tree has grown over the cable in several spots, so the cable is still attached to the tree.
Part of the tree.
And yeah, and people have used it to chain up their dogs while they're having a picnic or something, but that was the original jail there. Then the people in town got a little bit embarrassed that that was their jail, and so they built a second jail, which was a very small wooden structure. It used 2x6s. Stacked on their sides to make the walls of it, and had a tin roof, and it had a grate, a big steel grate for an iron grate for a door. But the problem was it wasn't very secure, and so most of the folks who got locked up in there, if they wanted to, they could parole themselves by just knocking out the roof and climbing out.
So it's pretty close to, you know, Mayberry, where everyone knows where the key is.
Exactly.
So then
yeah,
it's back
just
to the big
give me
tree.
A leg up. But no, so then that's when they built the jail that we've renovated down in Gleason and turned into a little mini museum. They built it out of reinforced concrete, and it was reinforced with fenders, rebar, There's some in the
fenders. What do you mean fenders?
Well, like car fenders, bumpers.
When was this jail built?
It was built in 1910.
Oh.
And so there's some old railroad track in the floor. We kept the hole that was in the floor open so you could see, oh, that's a railroad track that they used any steel they could find, any scrap metal they could find. And so there's cable in the, and it's still standing. It's been 100 years, you know, a little bit over 100 years that jail was built. It opened up April 30th, 1910. And it's still standing. And if you go over to the cousin town, Cortland, the only building that's still fully standing is the jail. They were well built. That one was built in 1909. The jail in Gleason was built the year after 1910.
Okay, so let's take a step back. Where we last left you, you were in your car on your day off heading to
Cochise County.
Yeah, where you didn't know, but somewhere to try to, you know, to feed your passion of history.
Yeah.
How did you go from, you know, gosh, I got a day off and I want to do something fun, to finding all about these ghost towns? How did you do that?
Well, I had I had kind of decided just on my own that some of the most interesting history in Arizona is its earliest history, in terms of the transitions between time periods or between populations. So the time period between the Chiricahua Apache, who inhabited that entire area and roamed through that whole area, and the Anglo culture, largely Anglo culture, that time period was right in the last quarter century, you know, 1875 through the first quarter century of the 1900s, so 1875 to 1925. And there's a lot, anytime you've got edges of civilization, whether it's a geographical edge or in that case a time edge, you've got edge dwellers. And I always found the edge dwellers to be the most interesting people.
Okay, so give us an example of someone who's an edge dweller that kind of...
Yeah, bring the muskets and the grape shot in here.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, who's an edge dweller that you first learned about maybe when you were young that has kind of spurred you along to where you are now?
Well, here's an edge dweller from the Gleason area.
Okay.
There's a couple there named John and Sandy Weber. And they had lived in Rockford, Illinois, and had decided they'd had enough of that life. And they moved out to Phoenix 25 or so years ago, maybe 30 years ago. They moved out to Phoenix and were trying to figure out what they were going to do in their retirement, as it were. And they came upon people who were selling snakeskin stuff on the street corners. And they said,
Phoenix.
Yeah, in Phoenix.
It happens
on the street corner.
Oh,
yeah.
Snake oil, snake skins.
Yeah.
Those Phoenicians will sell anything.
And they said, oh, we could do that. Well, they moved down to the Gleason area. And actually, for a time, they lived right across the street from the jail, where there's still a saloon standing in that town, too. And they started, they got all the right permits from the state and they learned all about it. Then they capture and kill snakes and they skin them and they make stuff out of them. And they've got a shop that's about 3 miles away from down, if you want to call it downtown, the one intersection in Gleason. It's called the world's largest rattlesnake craft shop. And there are homemade signs on Gleason Road that you can spot, and it'll point you in the right direction. And when you go down there, bring your camera, and I used to say lots of film, but bring extra memory cards, because they've got a little trailer filled with pretty much anything you could think of that you could make out of or cover with snakeskin. You want a cover for your golf putter. Got it. That's over here. You want belt buckles. That's over here. John seems to be fascinated with weird, obscure knives. So he's got some knives that you'd only see in some kind of a Mel Gibson apocalyptic movie or something, with spikes on them and all these. And the sheaths are all covered in snakeskin. And so they sell all of this stuff. And then what's fascinating to me is the way you pay for it is outside this little trailer, there's a box with a lid that's on a stand like a podium. And the sign above it says, today is self-serve day. If you buy anything, put your money under the rock and write down in the little notebook what you bought so we know what's missing. And you open it up, and there's money underneath the rock, and there's all these things written on the notebook, and you just pay right there. And if you make a check, you make it out to so-and-so. And it's a fascinating place. But outside of the little trailer, they've got a collection of thousands of things that they have found in the desert or traded with the local ranchers. There's old bicycles, muskets. There's an entire 19th century blacksmith shop there that with all of these tools, old cash registers, shoes, all these farm implements, all these things that they found, and they kind of organize them into an outdoor museum. And it's all free. You just wander around. That's where you want to bring your camera, because people go out to, it's one of the places that I bring visitors to Tucson to. If they want to see something that you're not going to see anyplace else, John and Sandy's Rattlesnake Craft Shop is right there.
In Gleason, Arizona.
Yep. It's about 12 miles east of Tombstone.
What was Gleason? I mean, why did people originally move there? What were they mining?
Copper was the major producer.
When was it the boom town? What year?
Gleason was a boom town basically from 1900 till about 1920. After World War I, the prices of copper dropped pretty considerably. And once the price drops down to a certain level, copper, unlike gold, where, you know, if Jeff wanted to go out and be a gold miner, you could, if you get lucky, a one-man operation, you can get enough to live off of. Copper mining is all big business. You have to have a lot of equipment. You have to have a lot of money. You have to use up a lot of space. You know? Yeah. It really takes quite an investment. So if they don't get that return with a high copper price, it's just not worth it. And that's what happened after World War I. The copper prices dropped, and that was pretty much it.
And it wiped Gleason out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
We went back to being ranchers.
Which is what they were originally?
Once the Apache were moved out, yeah, it was basically ranchers and a few prospectors.
Okay. All right, we've got to take our last break of the hour. We'll be right back with more on Southern Arizona ghost towns, so stick around.
There was a tall oak tree that loved the babbling brook, and the babbling brook loved the mountain high, and the mountain high loved the sky above. The Creator looked down and saw.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045, 5starTermite.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Ronstadt from Ronstadt Insurance and the Fred and Jeff Show. We are right in the middle of Medicare open enrollment, so if you need help or your mom and dad need help with their Medicare insurance, whether it's a supplement or a Medicare Advantage plan, give us a call at Ronstadt Insurance, 721-4848. We'll be happy to help them. We'll sit down and show them plans from Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Net, United Healthcare. We pretty much have them all. Give us a call at Ronstadt Insurance, 721-4848. We are pioneers in good service.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony's Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony's Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
And we are back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Southern Arizona.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and ghosts.
And cultural events, you nerd.
Make living in Tucson, Southern Arizona is so gosh darn wonderful.
That's right.
We invite you to visit us at FredandJeff.com. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the program on iTunes. And this is, you know, the boys and I went trick-or-treating a couple weeks back. It's, you know, it's been a couple week and a half
two
or so.
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. And we went back to the old neighborhood. And one of our favorite neighbors, her name is Jeannie Rojo, we came to the door. She went ballistic. She was like, I listen to the show every week. You guys are so great.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she was mad at you because you still owed her $20.
Well, I do owe her $20. But and she was just so excited. And the one thing she said is that she's always driving the car. She never gets a chance to win the roses because she's not near the email. So just for listener appreciation for this week, Jeannie, if you're listening, I'm testing you. This is a test and appreciation. If you're listening, email me at fred@friendjeff.com. You get a dozen roses, and we'll see if you actually do listen to the show.
Right.
And Madam Rojo.
And if you're not Jeannie, don't email Fred this week because he'll know.
I will know.
All right, so we're here with Father Glenn Snow from St. Cyril's, one of our local historians. And Glenn, before we had to take our break, we were talking about the structures in these ghost towns, and the first structures that they built were usually these jails.
Well, no, you know, I was thinking about this.
What were you thinking about, Fred?
Well, when you were talking about the last segment, that the saloon was on the other side of the street next to jail. And that really popped my brain because it's like, that was probably the first structure that was built was a saloon.
Yeah. The saloons were, and there were many
of
them.
You don't need a jail, right?
Most of the residents of the saloon had been very recently previous denizens of the saloons. There's a cause and effect there for
right.
most of that.
It still happens today. Yeah. So, were there any like really famous people to be in that you know had to spend some time in that Gleason jail? Or do you have any great stories?
Well, there's a couple of stories that come to mind. One of them wouldn't have been famous to us now, but was pretty famous at the time, was a guy named Luther Price. Luther was not a good guy. Luther had his troubles. He was the one of the sons of Mary Price, who was a granddaughter of, or was the daughter of a governor of New Mexico. And she and her husband disappeared while the kids were young. But she and her husband had one of the biggest ranches in Cochise County, a cattle ranch. But this was it's a very prominent family, and with a long history there. But this was the one bad apple in the group. Luther was, found guilty of horse thievery and spent some time in the territorial prison in Yuma. And then when he got out of there, he made his way up to the town of Pierce, which is, south of, if you come south out of Wilcox, you'd hit Pierce. And there, Luther made friends with, a young man whose sister ran a store and basically connived with his friend, who was probably drunk most of the time, Tully. He connived with him to take over the store. And then decided that if he could get rid of Tully, then he could take over the store and he would just use all the stuff for his own use, you know? And so what he did was he said to his buddy Tully, listen, Tully, you've had a rough time and you need a vacation. Look, I know this place, Cottonwood Canyon, on the other side, in the foothills of the Chiricahuas, and it's right off my mom's ranch. And, let's go up there. Let's go camping. But don't tell anybody that you're going up there because we don't want anybody to come and bother us.
Oh, you know? First sign.
Yeah. So they went up there and he got Tully drunk, which wasn't too tough, and hit him over the head with his six gun and dropped him down a 130-foot, almost dry well.
Wow.
And Tully was killed when he hit the water at the bottom. And then, but it was an abandoned well, so he covered it, Luther Price covered it back up. And And then brilliant child that he was, showed up back in Pierce riding Tali's horse with all his gear. And everybody said to him, what happened to Tal? And it was almost like he was surprised that they asked the question. He went, he went to Mexico. Well, didn't he take his horse and stuff? And, oh, no, he sold it to me. Oh, really, you former horse thief, you? Where's the receipt? He didn't write a receipt. Really, we think that you did something to him and came in with his stuff. And Luther's response was, hey, if you don't have a body, you don't have a crime. So they hired an Apache who was living there to track back where Luther had come into town from, and they tracked him back to the well, opened up the well, and they had to send... They actually sent three guys down. They could see at the bottom what looked like a body floating in the water. And they sent three guys down. The first two guys were overcome by the fumes. And the third guy wrapped a shirt soaked in whiskey around his head and went down and wrapped a rope around the body and raised him up. And they did an autopsy and found out that he was killed with the fall, with the bump on his head from the six shooter. And so now Luther knew he was in trouble. And so he got arrested, and he got convicted of murder. He pled guilty, actually, because that avoided the noose. And he went off to go to the prison at Florence. Well, he was on a road gang, as a lot of the prisoners from Florence prison were, you know, from the penitentiary were, and he escaped with a couple of guys, and they went down to Mexico. While he was in Mexico, there was an outbreak of smallpox down there. Now, Mexico had no vaccines for smallpox, although the United States doctors did. So when his friends, his buddies, fellow escapees got the smallpox, he decided he'd better go up to the United States again, just in case. And he hid out near his grandmother's place and started feeling ill. So figured he'd better get some help. And he called for the deputy in my little town. Leif Gibson was the deputy in that little town, who's got his own story that is fascinating. But Leif Gibson went and picked him up and brought him back. He spent the night overnight in the Gleason jail on the way back to Tombstone. When he got back to Tombstone, the smallpox came out, and it just bloomed on him. And so they had to put him in a separate house outside of Tombstone because they didn't want the flies picking that up and infecting the other people in town. Luther survived that, went back up to the prison at Florence, and then got meningitis later. And in 1923, he was released from prison, according to the prison records, to, quote, go home and die with his mother. So he came back down, and they thought he'd last a few weeks. He lasted about, I think it was 2 or 3 months, and then died of meningitis at his mother's ranch.
That is a crazy story. Crazy. And this deputy from Gleason, you said he had a crazy story?
Well, yeah, that's actually my favorite story, because it's the deputy from Gleason, his name was Leif Gibson. He grew up, he was born in Moab, Utah, and he came down and he was living in Graham County, north of Cochise County. And when he was 18 years old, he and some of his buddies were out playing kind of a stick baseball out in the field, and a Mexican man came riding by on his horse with a carriage, and they got into an argument, and Leif hit the guy over the head with the baseball bat. The guy went down the road a little bit, died down the road, and so Leif got convicted and put in prison. And he was in Yuma. While he was in Yuma, he learned how to be in the penitentiary. He learned how to be a barber. Got out of the penitentiary, came to Tombstone, and was an honest worker for a long time. He was a barber. In fact, he knew so many people and was so well-liked that Sheriff Harry Wheeler asked him to become the deputy sheriff in this town of Gleason that was still booming pretty well. And so he was the deputy sheriff in Gleason. But while there, that was the period of Arizona's prohibition, before national prohibition. And so all the booze that came in from New Mexico and from Mexico through the dry state of Arizona, a lot of it came right through Cochise County along the roads that he was responsible for. So he would confiscate the booze, but it turns out he didn't confiscate all of it. He was, as it turns out, the biggest bootleg, wholesale bootlegger in Cochise County at the time while he was deputy sheriff.
How do you, okay, so we don't have hardly any time left, but the question I have is, how did you find out all this stuff?
Well, there's two newspapers that kind of give a lot of records for that. One of them is for the ghost town of Cortland, Arizona, had a newspaper from 1909 to 1920, and I managed to get copies of almost all of that newspaper. I have them on, they're digital right now, and they're on my computer. And the other is the Tombstone Epitaph, and I have copies of the Tombstone Epitaph from about 1885 or so to 1974.
And if people want to get copies of this stuff, where should they go?
Well, as far as I know, I'm the only one who has all of those copies.
Okay, so the number of St. Cyril's is.
But you can get the Tombstone Epitaph, you can get from most of those, you can now get from the Library of Congress. They have a historical newspapers section, and you can go through it, you know, page by page and issue by issue for most of those copies.
That's awesome. Folks, we are out of time. Glenn, thanks for so much for coming and sharing. And I'd like to say that you're the perfect example of someone we like to talk about on the show, because you're someone that came to Tucson, was looking for something fun to do, and instead of complaining that there's nothing to do here, you went out and found it. Good for you. You're a great example to all of our neighbors. So keep up the good work, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege.
All right. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Fred and Jeff Show. We'll see you next week for another action-packed show.